Hello, and welcome to Dragon's Trove, where everything we talk about is Dungeons & Dragons. My name's Tristan, and I'm joined by Troy.
Hello.
Hi.
And my brother, Jace. Today, we're going to talk about how we first started playing and why we love it. Enjoy. All right, so episode one, here we go. Dungeons & Dragons. It's classified by Wizards of the Coast as the world's greatest role-playing game. I don't know. Would you guys agree with that?
I mean, I wouldn't actively disagree with it.
Yeah, neither would I.
I mean, I just can't see myself playing any other tabletop role-playing games.
And if you've played most modern games, you've been playing D&D.
Very true. I did see, though, I was just doing some internet browsing, and I found Vampire the Masquerade just released their fifth edition. I don't know who plays that game, but I'm sure I'm going to offend somebody by bad-mouthing it.
I don't know. I was not prepared to respond to that.
I can think of a couple people from high school who would probably fit the bill to play that game.
Fit the mold for that. That's true.
Anyway, okay, so... today, like I said, we're going to be talking about playing Dungeons & Dragons for the first time. I am actually not as far along as Jace. In fact, Troy and I started at the same time. Jace had tried to get me to play, I don't even know how many times, probably three or four different times.
At least, like, you should definitely tell the story of how you were like, yeah, I won't enjoy that.
Oh.
And I essentially told the story right there, so.
Yeah, so that was it, so.
There you go.
Yeah, so anyway, I always thought that Dungeons & Dragons was, like, the last bit of nerddom that I was kind of afraid to cross over into. And Jace had tried for, I don't know, several times. He rolled up characters for me. Remember with the rat ranger guy that you rolled up for me.
I ended up stealing him for a campaign later.
Yeah, we went into like great detail with this guy, and he went to all the trouble of rolling him up, and anyway, and I didn't even play.
Yeah, that was great.
Just left him hanging on that one.
Yeah, but anyway, after that, I don't know what even Troy. I really can't remember what like got us in the mood to even try it.
Well, it was one of our friends, kind of, well, Paco, really. Jay started a group together and Paco joined, and then we got Eaton, and then kind of just, it was almost like peer pressure. You fell and you finally agreed to play, and then you called me. I remember you called me. I was on vacation in Florida, and you called me and you were texting me about how much fun you had that week, and I have to try it. And I was the same way like you. I was like, oh no, I'm already like falling way too deep into this nerddom thing, and that draws the line. I can't do that. And so you finally talked me into it. So the next week I came to play, and I remember we rolled up my character like an hour before we started that night at your house.
And what was that character's name?
Oh, what was that? That was Drogo Tea Leaf.
That's right.
That was
the name that will never go away.
Yeah, that was what was it? What was that campaign? That was 3.5, right, Jace?
Yeah, I do believe so.
Yeah, that was our first
campaign.
Persephone.
We did 3.5. Yeah, yeah, and
I switched characters like every session after that.
You did. I kept four or five characters. Yeah, I kept mine, and
you're trying to cover your bases.
To this day, I'm still like connected with Drogo. Like, I still have like, I don't know. He's important to me, I guess. My first character.
Yeah, he. You definitely play that same character or a variation of his name quite often.
Once, but thanks. Yeah, I played his son. I pulled his son into a 5e campaign.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I feel like it's more than that, but yeah.
I played actually a version of your, because I like playing Rogue. Rogue is one of my favorite classes, and that was what Drogo was. And then Drogon, his son, was... I did play another rogue with that one. And then I did... it wasn't a rogue. I think it was an assassin that you created, if I remember right. You did a little homebrew, and I did a, you did a rat folk with him. And oh, I did... Yeah. I did a kind of version of a skill monkey with an assassin instead, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the kind of characters you like to play.
Yeah, I've been delving into some different things. I've been reading a lot. I know for this campaign coming up, I'm going to play a cleric for the first time. I tried my hand at a sorcerer not too long ago. I really liked that one, too. But when I first started, I just wanted to find something that I liked and something that I could really... you know, dive deep into and get the hang of, because I was in way over my head when we first started. So,
sure.
You know, I just wanted to...
Yeah, I used to refer to you as Troy. Can I add sneak attack to that?
But, yeah, I mean, sneak attack is OP.
Well, I don't know. I had a really hard time landing on a character that I enjoyed. And I finally did with Gallon Moon Whisper. He was
Forgot about him.
Yeah, he was a fun character to play.
Yeah, he was my favorite one that you've made thus far.
But I've got a thing for dwarves. Just so the audience know, I've got a thing for dwarves. It's like every character I play starts off as a dwarf, and if he's not a dwarf, he started as a dwarf, and I just changed it.
Yep, exactly. I was about to say that. I feel like that's your favorite.
At one point in time.
Yeah.
I feel you, dude. It's like with my elf stuff. It's like I'm always playing an elf.
Yeah, so Jace is, he's been playing longer. Like, you know, if you can't tell, he was kind of the guy who got us into it to begin with. So, Jace, your first time playing Dungeons & Dragons, because our story sucks compared to your stories.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, there was definitely some dumb stuff, that's for sure, that happened to me. I started originally all the way back in AD&D. That was the first thing that I had ever touched. And then, you know, we always kind of played with that. I think AD&D came out in, like 1990, 1989, something around there.
Let's do a fact check.
It's old AF. But I remember... AD&D. The big one, we played some 3.5 because one of my buddies got a big bunch of those books. I don't remember when that came out. I think it was like early 2000s, like maybe 2001, maybe 2000. I don't remember. But 3.5 came out in 2003, and I was 12 years old. And I remember when it came out, one of my buddies got a bunch of the books and everything. And that's really where I started playing. You know, like, I started it when we were so young, we had no idea how skills worked or you know, like, weapons or any of that bull crap. We had a character that had a name, your sword and your armor, your health, your AC, and your stats on the page, and that's what we had. I mean, like, it was basically, you could have just broken it down into hit, health, and hurt.
There you go.
That's, like, the only stats that we had. And it was interesting. I mean, it was very, very interesting.
Wow.
Some of my best moments come from when before we all knew the rules or cared or anything like that. But in retrospect, everything kind of sucked.
Everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the fact checkers, 1977 was AD&D first edition. And then second edition came out in 1989.
Okay.
And that was actually when AD&D second edition came out. That is when TSR was starting to, I think, kind of lose a hold. And then sometime in the 90s, I believe, is when they sold to Wizards of the Coast. And then 2000, third edition came out. Which, well, obviously wasn't very popular because in three short years later, 3.5 came out.
That did it just better. It was like an errata. Like, I own the entire 3.5 and 3.0 collection of books. and I have the errata of the 3.0 versus the 3.5, and all 3.5 did was kind of just refine it, so to speak. Yeah. Like, it's not a different game.
Well, a lot of things that that I've read online that talk about third edition was just the, like, the mass amount of change that came, and so from your Grognards who were playing AD&D, and then third edition comes out and it really, really changed the game. I mean, I think that's when your edition wars really started, though, was when 3.5 came out.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and then fourth edition came out in 2008, and then 2014 fifth edition came out, and Troy, I think we started playing in 2015.
Yep, it was August 2015 when we started our, and then, like I said, our first campaign was 3.5, and then later that fall, you and I started playing 5th edition together with your little brother.
Yep.
At your house on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
It was that's another funny story, because Jace was, I don't remember if you just completed or you were about to complete your collection of all 3.5 books, and then
I had just completed it.
Yeah, and then we, Tristan and I kind of cowboyed that, and
we cucked him. We cucked him hard.
We did.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
We switched the group to 5e players.
Yeah, but I do have to say, I mean, okay, so I'm going to ask you this. Do you regret moving to 5th edition from 3.5?
As a DM, no. Not one bit. What's 3.5?
Yeah.
As a player, yeah.
Yeah. I get that. There was a lot. And it's not even, like, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, stuff about, like, customization just isn't there in 5th edition. But I don't think that's the right word. I kind of think modular would be the right word to use, because you can customize your character. You know, there's, like, no end to customizing. But as far as class modularization, I think 3.5 just had more, just because of the sheer volume of books that they put out.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, 5th edition is...
Sure, I don't disagree with
that. 5th edition is, you know, we're 4 years into it, and some of these runs, I'm looking at these years, you know, we're coming up on, like, the maturity date of when a new edition would roll over, if we look at the life of 3.5, like, 4th edition, and then 4th edition to 5th edition. But I think that what they're doing very well is that they're... With 5th edition, they're staggering the content more, so that it feels like when you do get a book that it is a complete compendium.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, that it's there is love that went into it, and, like, they actually did care about the game when they were making it. They're not just putting it out there to say, okay, give me all your money.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are things that I like and don't like about the supplements. Like, it, there's a lot of crossover content in them. How I look at it, and a lot of times what they're promised to be, they don't end up being. Which I'm used to being disappointed, so that's not a big deal.
Well, I play Destiny.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But other than that, you know, as far as, like, the lore goes into everything, I love it. I love the approach of, we don't want to throw content in this for the sake of throwing content into it. That's why you see an expansion of a lot of just the lore of things, and adding, like, little classes, little tidbits to races and other things like that, rather than just completely adding in something ridiculous or anything along those lines.
Right.
Well, that's what I kind of saw too, is they're not just flooding, like you said, content for content's sake. They're not just flooding, you know, every book has six new sub-races or six new races, playable races for all the characters. It's kind of, like you said, it's more compact. It's more lore-based. Mm-hmm. So I like that a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to search through my book and be like, oh, yeah, I need to play a Poison Dusk Lizard Folk because it gives me +4 to dexterity. You know, I got my lizard folk in there, and then I can have him pretend to be from a Poison Dust tribe.
And it seems like with Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes that just came out, that, you know, even though, like, the Forgotten Realms is kind of like the de facto setting, that Wizards of the Coast, you know, like, that's the thing. But, you know, there are players who love Dragonlance. There are players who love Eberron. There are players who love Greyhawk. You know, there's players who love Dark Sun. And if you go and read in Mordekainen's book, it actually does have lore that fits, you know, all of those settings. And it's really cool because Mordekainen is a, you know, he's a plains traveler. He goes to these different realms and these settings. And actually a cool thing, I believe that he was actually a character made by Gary Gygax. If that's right, I'm going to have to fact check myself here.
There you go.
I heard some people from WOTC refer to it as Mordekainen, and I don't like that. So it will be Mordekainen's forever in my
life. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Mordekainen. Let's see, yeah, so... Yeah, he was a player character that Gary Gygax, the father of D&D, started when he started his first Greyhawk campaign.
Don't forget about Dave Arneson.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's true. He gets left out. But another thing that I really enjoy about the 5th edition books is even though... It seems like it's pretty well split down the middle. I don't know. You guys correct me if you think different, but...
Absolutely.
Already started.
Jump right on it. No, but it's like, for a while there, the books that were coming out, to me, felt really campaign heavy. And then, all you really had for a little bit was the Player's Handbook and then Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide. But then we got...
Yuck.
We got... Right. We got something from the campaign books, though, in, like, Princes of the Apocalypse. What was that PDF or whatever that went along with it?
Oh, crap. It was the Elemental Evils one that they added in.
Right,
along
so
there.
Even though it is a campaign module, like, it still came with, you know, there are playable races and there are things in a lot of these campaign books that kind of, I don't know, maybe give you more of a want to put that in your collection, even though, like, I love the pre-made adventures because it's just, you know, they're pre-done for you and you can really, you know, you can cut content here and there and it makes for,
sure.
For like a, to me at least, it makes for a more involved story because, you know, you can focus on different aspects of the story instead of when you're world building
sure.
from DMing, you know, it's like you almost get caught up in building all this lore and so I really like them, but there are some people who absolutely hate them.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I like them because you're kind of alluding to, it's a good base for you to start. Like, they've already started. You can take out what you want to take out.
Mm-hmm.
You can add what you want to add. You know, I know Jace really likes to homebrew, so, you know, you can take aspects of it from what they were building for you, and then you can just make it your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to what Tristan was saying before we go into a different subject of the adding the PDFs. I think that's great that they add content along with their modules, but the completionist in me gets really angry because the only way I can get those PDFs on my bookshelf is if I have a company print them out for me, and that's not any fun. I really wish they would release that in a book form or release that in their books,
right.
Yeah.
Rather than an added thing afterwards.
I understand. You're old fashioned. You want it on your shelf.
Well, I mean, like, I have all the books in PDF as well. I like turning around and seeing them on my shelf. Or, hey, do you know blah, 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 blah? Oh, yeah, cool. Let me go grab my Sandstorm book for that. I got that right in there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that brings me to, like, I love D&D Beyond. I think that's one of the coolest things that they've done to, you know, bring it to the 21st century. Really helps roll in a character sheet, but I don't like buying a book twice.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, I don't either.
I wish they could have figured out a way to do that. And you weren't wasting... I mean, it feels like you're
here
wasting
comes
money, really.
Money.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, I understand it's a business. They got to get their money out of it, too. And it is two different...
Don't hate. You got to appreciate.
Yeah, it is two different platforms. I understand that as well. That's what they keep telling everybody who complains about it. But it is really annoying when you're, you know, you want the ease of using D&D Beyond, like this new campaign that we're getting ready to start. I was using that, and then I was, you know, I was missing like two or three things, and then I had to go and buy a book just so I could get those two or three things because I wanted the simplicity of having my D&D Beyond.
Right.
But
no, I'm with you. You just buy it like a little bit at a time.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I,
you know, and that way it doesn't feel as bad.
Yeah, and that's what I did. You know, the last few campaigns, I just used bits and pieces of the Player's Handbook, and then finally, because I had the Player's Handbook obviously hardback, so I went ahead and just recently finished purchasing the Player's Handbook. It was only like $12 that I had left. So
yeah, so it's not a big deal.
No, I mean, not like, too bad.
You just don't think about it. No. You just do it.
Right. But,
like a Band-Aid.
But like, here's my thing is like on D&D Beyond, they have that legendary bundle, you know, that you can like get all the books and stuff. But does that encompass like getting new books?
No,
it's just what they have right now. But I do think that, and I can check cause I'm on D&D Beyond right now. It might come with the pre-order of the one new book.
Dragon Heist?
Master's Guide. No, Guildmaster's Guide that's coming out later this... I think it's later this year.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know
if Guide to Ravnica?
Yeah, the Guide to Ravnica.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think it's given the Waterdeep expansion in there, but...
This includes...
Which, by the way, is a fantastic read.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, I don't believe in pre-mades.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though, about pre-mades is, like, I think that it helps... it helps with, like... especially beginner DMs, it usually you can find a scenario that you would like want to homebrew, and it kind of gives you the foundation to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like it says, like, okay, somebody's already thought of this, so this is just how I can change it. That's why I really like them too, and that's why I like running them, because, you know, you go through it, and then at the end of running it, you know, even if you don't make it to the end, you've covered enough different scenarios that you feel more comfortable the next time, you know, you're going to homebrew something, or you're just going to go, you know, off the seat of your pants or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And I can understand that point of view perfectly. I just, my thing is, one, I've DM'd for a long time, you know, like almost exclusively since I was like 15 or so. So I got a decent bit of experience with that. Not saying that I'm the best, I just have it. When it comes to campaigns and everything, I'm of the opinion the best way to spoil your story for yourself is to let your players play it. And that's the thing that I have problems with the pre-made campaigns, is I end up just tracking off to who knows where.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, it's, you know, it's not for everybody. And it's really, I mean, for the people who like the Forgotten Realms lore, that's why they're so great, because, you know, that's...
I own them all, and I like reading
right,
them.
Right, that's it. And really, you know, they're cool to read. That's another reason why I buy them. But I also like to, as you know, I like to get them, and I like to run them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. I like to read them and learn from them, you know, draw inspiration from whatever I can, learn whatever I can.
Yeah, it's just playing this game, it's so much more than just playing a game, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of silly to say, but I feel like I don't know, it just helps with, you know, the way that you think about, you know, things in life. I think about them differently now that I play, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. It kind of helps you to think outside the box about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a great, you know, critical thinking builder.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps you within that area of life. And it's weird to think about like that, but I mean, they've already done studies about kids who play video games, maybe not hack and slash video games, but, you know, different kind of video games. That help you with puzzle building and critical thinking and stuff like that. Dungeons & Dragons is no different. You know, it puts, you know, three or four people who, you know, may not hang out all the time, but they come together to play D&D, and they have to come and think, and not only think about what they should do to figure out this puzzle or figure out how to get out of the situation, but think in a way that maybe you wouldn't normally think because you're playing a character.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to channel that and kind of have to role play it and play it like they would or think like they would or try to.
Right.
And then figure your way out of it.
Yeah, and it's so much different than playing a video game because, like, I've been playing video games, you know, like my whole life. And mm-hmm. when I sat down to play Dungeons & Dragons for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, this is a little bit different. You know, like, it challenged me. It challenged the way that my brain works, and it challenged the way that I, you know, thought about what it was that my character was doing. And, you know, like, even when I read books in, you know, in my whatever they call it, your imagination or, you know, when you're reading the book and you can play, it's like a movie reel, you know, playing in your head. And I always like have a very vivid image while I'm reading, but then playing Dungeons and Dragons, it was like
same way.
Yeah. It was the exact same thing, but I wasn't reading a book. And so,
yep. I like to think of Dungeons and I like to think of Dungeons and Dragons as like video games. Like think about like the best open world video game you've ever played in your life. And then, like, put that on HGH or something. Give it some steroids.
Yeah, right.
Because you can literally do whatever you want. Like, you know, Jace homebrews or you're running this campaign thing or one of these, you know, pre-made things. But the players get to determine where it goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can kind of guide them, but it's, like, the most open world thing you could do. If you want to sit there and spend 3 hours of your session just role-playing and you don't even leave a tavern, you can do that.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so cool.
And some of those, sessions like that, those are the best ones, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I personally don't even look at it as a video game per se. You know, I've always looked at it, well, not always, I can't say that, but I look at it as, you know, you're sitting down, you're adopting the persona of another individual that you created. You know, you're trying to think like he thinks, you're trying to act like he acts, you know, and it's not... You know, like, it's not a video game where you can, like, save and quit or, you know, like, level up for XP and stuff like that. Like, you are gaining knowledge and becoming better at things like you would grow in life with everything. And I think that makes the game a lot more enjoyable when you stop seeing it as just a video game per se.
Yeah, no, for sure. And something that gets on my nerves, and you know what, if this is how you enjoy... you know, tabletop games, this is how you enjoy doing stuff, you know, I'm not knocking you, I'm just knocking the way that you do things, but like people who min max Jace drives me crazy.
I don't min max.
I feel
that's not fair.
Shots fired.
I feel like if I were to look at past characters that I would find a min max character. I might find 2 min max characters.
Yeah,
sure. Or 3.
Sure.
Or 4.
How I've always looked at it is like there's no sense in having like a character that's broken with everything that can do everything. But obviously if your character's a backstory that he's like an acrobat, like he grew up in a circus, and you know he was a line walker and everything else like that. If he comes across a check where he would have to like hold his balance or something along those lines, it's not very likely that he's going to fail that, you know, if he was anything good at it, because he did grow up with it. So that's how I've always looked at, you know, your stats reflect what your character does, you know, like what he did in life and everything like that. Like you know, I've played guitar since I was about 14. There's a good chance there's not a whole lot of stuff that I'm gonna, you know, I'm not gonna screw up the basics, so to speak. I'm past that, and that's how I've always kind of looked at it. Not necessarily min-maxing for the sake of min-maxing.
I mean, that was definitely something hard for me to get whenever I first started playing, because it, like, I looked at it as a game, like a video game or whatever. Like, obviously, I want my character to be the best at whatever his job is. I don't want to bring the party down, so I want him to be the best at that. So that was kind of rough. I think a lot of us, and a lot of our group was first-timers, you know, or they were just starting out. So I think a lot of us were doing that when we first started, and now it's kind of like I'm kind of getting to the point where it's more, well, why would my character, like Jace, like you're saying, Jace, like why would my character be good at that? Like, what's in his backstory that makes him good at that, and how can I role play that? Because I don't want, you know, I don't want a skill monkey just for the sake of being a skill monkey. Something needs to explain why he can do all the things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a good point that you brought up about. the backstory and, you know, actually indulging in a backstory. I think mm-hmm. that a lot of times that I did it at the beginning, that's why I switched characters, you know, every single session there for like 3 or 4 sessions, because I couldn't find a character that I liked because I was playing it just like that. You know, I was playing the characters in a game setting, and as soon as I started to, it really took me reading more, and it took me watching things like Critical Role or, and this is still one of my favorites to watch, Greg Tito from Wizards of the Coast. He DM'd mm-hmm. Out of the Abyss when the Rage of Demons was real big. And so I watched his YouTube series, and to watch the characters and how they played and their stats. Oh, they weren't carrying an 18 at level 1, you know, and the stat and stuff like that. And it was, it was just cool. And so then I started thinking about it in a dynamic sense of, you know, your characters are not represented by their stats. That's how I think about it.
Yeah,
and, and your characters are represented by their personality. And the only way that you can develop a personality, for me anyway, is I've got to delve into the backstory. I've got to come up with a history for this person. And then, okay, now I can see, okay, so this affected him this way and this, you know, or her.
Absolutely.
You know, it affected them in a way that, okay, now we're here, you know, in the present. Mm-hmm. This is why I act the way that I act. And to me, that just opened up a whole entire, you know, realm of possibilities for my characters that the stats were not indicative of how they were played.
Yeah. And then,
that can make perfect sense as well.
Yeah. And that was kind of, you know, a little bit how it was for me too. I kept changing my first character. I didn't change out characters, but I was a skill monkey. I was a rogue, but I wanted to be everything everybody else was. You know, we had a hit him with my stick kind of guy. And I still wanted to be able to do that. I wanted to, you know, be the hardest hitting dude on the team. And I, you know, every session someone would do something that was important to the party, and then I would get jealous of it. And I'd have to like catch myself. I'd have to check myself on doing that, because, you know, your character can't do everything.
Everybody's got to share the limelight, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, not if you're, you know, I was a halfling rogue. Well, obviously I'm not going to have the highest strength on the team. You know, I don't need to be doing that. I don't need to be trying to move a boulder or, you know, going up and smacking somebody in the middle of the fight. So, you know, it was something I definitely had to learn and change the way I was developing characters.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. And then, you know, like there's two completely different schools of thought on there of like what Tristan's saying and what I'm kind of getting at. Mm-hmm. And there's not a right or wrong way to do it. There's not a right or wrong way to interpret it.
Yeah, exactly.
It. You know, the most important part is that you're having fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if you look at some of these Critical Role things, podcasts and stuff like that, they're characters that whenever they started playing have close to a 90 point stat total, you know, on them, you know, which is huge. Mm-hmm. And then you look at other campaigns where they're using like they're not even using a 27 point buy. They're like using something as low as like a 24. I think I saw one time that was like an 18 or something like that, where their stats are just like sucky.
Mm-hmm.
And
or they do that. You know, like, they do that automatic in the player's handbook where it's like 15, 14, 13.
Yeah. Yeah. And stuff like that. And like me as a DM, I've seen my players play, and they like a success feels twice as good as a failure feels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a failure is always twice as bad as a success is. And so I tend to like the higher stat totals for my characters or my players' characters, because I just like seeing the smile on their face when they succeed something. You know, not all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like not they don't succeed in everything, but it is just it's a lot better to succeed than it is to fail.
Exactly. And
it's all about player happiness and fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's when you see people having fun, that's when you get inspired to play.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what got us, that's what gave us the itch, so to speak. I mean, when we first started playing that first session, we all had a blast. We weren't I wasn't the best role player for sure. I'm still not, but it was It was so much fun just to see my character in my head, you know, and everybody else had different visions, I'm sure, of what was happening, but in my head, you know, interact with these other characters and do these other things, and that, you know, success, like you said, success was a big part of it.
Yep.
Especially in our first sessions.
It's good.
Yeah, nobody likes to fail.
No, yep. And it's, no. It's a lot of fun, Dungeons & Dragons, even when you do fail. They're funny, yep. But go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just gonna say, like, you know, as we've been playing more and more, I do think it is obviously more fun when you do have success, but watching other people and hearing people talk about it and different things, and, you know, like Critical Role and different things like that, it is kind of cool to see those failures too, though, because, you know, it's, I don't know, to me, you got to think of it like a real, not real life, obviously it's fantasy, but a real scenario. Kind of.
I look at it as real life.
Yeah. So you're not
my fantasy, real
but
you're, life.
But you're not going to succeed every single battle. You know, you're going to fall on
absolutely.
Hardship. You're not going to succeed in every single, you know, bar fight that happens at a tavern or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you do have to have those moments that kind of bring you down so those successes do feel better.
Absolutely.
So,
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
Those failures too are some of the best character building moments.
Yeah, I mean, ones exist on the dice for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, like, seriously, those, you know, some of those failures, they suck when they happen, but those are what I look back at sometimes, you know, from sessions, and that's where I laugh the most.
Yeah, they definitely give you a great role-playing opportunity.
Exactly. And that's what it's all about. It's all about having fun, and Dungeons & Dragons is a lot of fun. I think that all of us can agree that we're better people for playing Dungeons & Dragons. No, I'm kidding. I think all of us can agree, though, that it's some of the most fun that we ever had, and it's some of the most fun we ever have, and it's some of the most fun we ever will have. I know for me, this is a hobby that's definitely not going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. Well, anyway, does anybody else have anything to add?
No.
Brush your teeth twice a day. It doesn't matter what time you do it.
Yeah, that's right. We need sponsored Colgate. Anyway, thank you guys for listening to us rant about our favorite hobby. We look forward to listening to this as well to hear how stupid we sound. We look forward to letting you listen to how stupid we sound. Next week, I have no idea what we're going to talk about, and neither will you until we start talking about it. So anyway, everybody, have a safe
Bye.
And wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
See you later.